exactly the same approach to use with your body when you sit down to meditate. Think of your body as the animal that you, as consciousness, are training. Every time you become conscious that your attention has wandered, and you bring it back like that, you're reconditioning your body to a new mind. You are mastering yourself and your past. So let's say you wake up in the morning and have a list of people to call, a list of errands to run, 35 texts to respond to, and all these emails to answer. If the first thing you do every morning is start thinking about all of those things that you have to do, your body is already in the future. When you sit down to meditate, your mind may naturally want to go in that direction. And if you allowed it, then your brain and body would be in that same predictable future, because you'd be anticipating an outcome based on your same past experience from yesterday. So the moment you start to notice your mind wanting to go in that direction, you just pull the reins in, settle your body down, and bring it back to the present moment, just as I do when I ride my stallion. And then, in the next moment, if you start thinking, yeah, but you have to do this, you forgot about that, and you need to do the thing you didn't get to yesterday. Just bring your mind back to the present moment again. And if it keeps happening, and that brings up the emotions of frustration, impatience, worry, and so on, just remember that whatever emotion you're experiencing is merely part of the past. So you just notice it, you become aware, ah, my body-mind wants to go to the past. All right, let's settle down and relax back into the present. Just as your mind will try to distract you, your body may do the same. It may want to get nauseated, create pain, or make that spot in the middle of your back itch. But if that happens, remember that it's just the body trying to be the mind. So as you master it, you are becoming greater than your body. If you can master it during your meditation each time, then when you walk back into your life, you're going to be more present, more aware, and more conscious, and less unconscious. Sooner or later, just as my stallion surrenders to me and follows my commands without letting the mares or anything else distract him, your body will also acquiesce to your mind during your meditation, without getting hijacked by any stray thoughts. And when the horse and rider are one, when the mind and body are working together, there's simply no greater feeling. You're in a new state of being. It's incredibly empowering. The meditation I'm going to walk you through in the next chapter begins with a technique the Buddhists call open focus. It's very helpful for getting into the altered state we're trying to achieve, because in our normal day-to-day existence, living in survival mode and marinating in stress hormones, we're naturally very narrow focused. We put all our attention on things and people and problems, focusing on the particle or matter, not on the wave or energy. And we define reality by our senses. We can call that type of attention object-focused. With all our attention on the outer world, which in this state appears more real to us than the inner world, our brains pretty much stay in a higher range beta brainwave state, the most reactive, unstable, and volatile of all the different brainwave patterns. Because we're on high alert, we aren't in a position to create, daydream, solve problems, learn new things, or heal. It's certainly not a state that's conducive to meditating. The electrical activity in our brains increases, and thanks to the fight-or-flight response, our heart rate and respiration naturally increase. Our bodies can't spend much, if any, of their resources for growth and optimal health, because they're always on the defensive, trying to protect us, just trying to help us make it through the day. Under these less than favorable conditions, our brains tend to compartmentalize, meaning that some regions of the brain begin to work separately from the others instead of working together, and some even work in opposition to each other, like stepping on the brake and the gas at the same time. It's a house divided against itself. In addition to the parts of the brain not communicating well with each other, the brain no longer communicates with the rest of the body in an efficient, orderly manner. Because the brain and the central nervous system control and coordinate all the other systems of our bodies, keeping our hearts beating and our lungs breathing, digesting food and eliminating waste, controlling our metabolism, regulating the immune system, balancing our hormones and keeping countless other functions working, we become unbalanced. Our brains send very disorderly messages and disintegrated signals down the spinal cord to the rest of the body. As a result, none of the body's systems get a clear message. Instead, the message is very incoherent. Picture the immune system responding, "I don't know how to make a white blood cell out of that instruction." And then picture the digestive system saying, "I can't tell if I should secrete acid in my stomach first, or if I should secrete it in my small intestine. These orders are pretty mixed up." At the same time, the cardiovascular system laments, "I can't tell if my heart should be in rhythm or out of rhythm, because the signal I'm getting is pretty out of rhythm itself. Is there really a lion around the corner again?" This state of imbalance keeps us out of homeostasis or equilibrium, and it's easy to see then how it sets us up for disease, producing arrhythmias or high blood pressure, unbalanced cardiovascular system, indigestion and acid reflux, unbalanced digestive system, and a preponderance of colds, allergies, cancer, rheumatoid arthritis and other conditions, unbalanced immune function, to name just a few examples. That state, with our brainwaves becoming scrambled and filled with static, is what I referred to in the last chapter as a state of incoherence. There's no rhythm or order to our brainwaves, or to the messages the brain sends the body. It's total cacophony. In the open focus technique, on the other hand, we close our eyes, take our attention off the outer world and its trappings, and instead open our focus to pay attention to the space around us, on the wave instead of the particle. The reason it works is that when we're sensing this space, we're not giving our attention to anything material, and we're not thinking. Our brainwave patterns shift to the more restful and creative alpha, and eventually theta as well. In this state, our inner world now becomes more real to us than the outer world, which means we're in a much better position to make the changes we want to make. Research shows that when we use the open focus technique properly, the brain starts to become more organized and more synchronized, with the different compartments working together in a more orderly fashion. And what syncs together, links together. In this level of coherence, the brain can now send more coherent signals throughout the entire nervous system to the rest of the body, and everything starts to move in rhythm, working together. Instead of cacophony, now our brains and our bodies are playing a beautiful symphony. The end result is that we feel more whole, integrated and balanced. My colleagues and I saw this type of consistent brain changes in the majority of the students we scanned in our workshops, so we know this technique works. After walking you through open focus, the meditation you'll do will move you into the practice of finding the present moment. Being present gives us access to possibilities on the quantum level that we didn't have access to before. Remember how I said that in the quantum field, the subatomic particles exist simultaneously in an infinite array of possibilities? In order for that to be true, the quantum universe can't have only one line of time. It must have an infinite number of timelines, simultaneously containing all of these possibilities stacked on top of one another. In fact, every experience, past, present, and future, of every single thing from the smallest microorganism to the most advanced culture in the universe exists within the field of unlimited information called the quantum field. I said the quantum world has no time, but the truth is that it has all time simultaneously. It just doesn't have linear time, which is the way we usually think of time. As the quantum model of reality says, all possibilities exist in the present moment. But if you're waking up every morning and doing the same sequence of events, making the same choices that lead to the same behaviors, that create the same experiences, that produce the same emotional payoff, then you aren't open to any of those other possibilities, and you aren't going anywhere new. Take a look at figure 11.1. The circle represents you in the present moment on a particular line of time. The line to the left of that represents your past, and the line to the right represents your future. Let's say that every day you wake up, go to the bathroom, brush your teeth, take the dog out, drink your coffee or tea, have the same breakfast, get dressed in the same routine way, drive to work along a familiar route, and so on. Each of these events is represented by a point on the timeline of your immediate future. So let's say you've gone through pretty much that same sequence every day for 10 years. Your body is then already programmed by habit to be in the future, based on your past, because as you emotionally begin to anticipate each of those events on your timeline, your body, as the unconscious mind, believes it's in that same predictable reality. And the same emotion signals the same genes in the same way. And now you're in that predictable future line of time. In fact, you could take that timeline from your past and just lift it up and set it into your future, because in this scenario, your past is your future. You're like the piano players who installed the circuitry in their brains just by thinking about playing the same sequence of keys over and over again, and like the finger exercisers who change their bodies by thought alone. You're priming your brain and conditioning your body into the same future as you mentally rehearse the same predictable daily scenario in your mind from yesterday. We can never find the present moment because our brains and bodies are already living in a known future reality based on the past. Now, take a look at all those points on your timeline that represent the choices, habits, actions, and experiences that create the same emotions in order to remind you of the feeling of you. There's no room for something new or unknown, something uncommon or miraculous to show up in your life, because those points are so closely knit together. It would be too inconvenient, and frankly, it would disrupt your routine. How upsetting it would be for something new to show up in the life of a personality that's unconsciously anticipating the future based on the past. I should warn you here that when you begin a meditation practice, if you just insert your meditation as another event on your timeline, there's a danger that you'll merely be adding another item to your to-do list. And if that's how you approach it, you still won't be able to find the present moment. To accomplish what you're after here, healing and making lasting changes, you have to be fully in the present moment, not thinking about what the next predictable event is on your timeline. That's true because wherever you place your attention is where you're placing your energy. So if you're paying even the smallest bit of attention to things, people, places, or events in your external environment, then you're reaffirming that reality. And if you're in the habit of obsessing about time, thinking about either the past, the known, or the future, which is based on your past, and so is also the known, then you're missing the present moment, where all possibility exists. When you focus on the known, you, as the quantum observer, can only get more of exactly that. You'll be collapsing all those possibilities in the quantum field into the same patterns of information called your life. In order to access the unlimited potential that's waiting for you in the quantum field, you have to forget about the known, your body, your face, your gender, your race, your profession, and even your concept of what you have to do today, so that you can remain for a while in the unknown, where you are no body, no one, no thing, and in no place and in no time. You have to become pure consciousness, nothing but a thought or an awareness that you're aware in a void of potentials, so that your brain can recalibrate. And when the body wants to distract you, but you keep mastering it and settling it back into the present moment over and over again until it acquiesces, the way you read about earlier, then that line that goes into the future no longer exists because the body is no longer living in that predictable destiny. You've disconnected from it or unplugged your energy circuits from it. Similarly, if your body is conditioned and addicted to emotions you've memorized that keep you connected to the past, but you manage to bring your body back and settle it down every time you feel angry or frustrated until your body finally surrenders into the present moment, then that line that goes into the past no longer exists either. You've unplugged from that line too. And when both your past and your future lines disappear, your predictable genetic destiny vanishes as well. In this moment, there's no longer any past to drive the future, and there's no longer any predictable future based on the past. You're solely in the present, where you have access to all those potentials and possibilities. And the longer you're invested in the unknown by unplugging from those timelines and lingering in those possibilities, the more energy you liberate from your body and make available for creating something new. Figure 11.2 demonstrates how the past and the future no longer exist when the brain and the body are totally in the present moment. The predictable reality of knowns does not exist. Therefore, you're in the unknown realm of possibilities. The meditation outlined in the next chapter includes a period where you'll get to linger in this potent unknown, in the blackness of possibility, and invest your energy into the void of potentials that exist in the present moment. Remember that even though it may look as if there's nothing there, it really isn't just empty blackness. It's the quantum field, and it's just bursting with energy and possibility. When my colleagues and I examined our advanced workshop students, who were able to become pure consciousness, a thought separate from this known reality, we saw the greatest strides in their ability to change their brains, their bodies, and their lives. If the placebo is about changing the body by thought alone, then a very important step is to become a thought alone. Here's one of my favorite examples of what can happen when you focus on the unknown in meditation. Not long ago, I was doing a workshop in Sydney, Australia, in which I was leading a meditation where I'd asked the participants to be no body, no one, no thing, and to be in no place and in no time. To become pure consciousness, lingering in the unknown, just as you're about to do in the next chapter. As I was watching the group meditate, I happened to notice a woman named Sophia, sitting in the third row, meditating with her eyes closed, just like everyone else. And all of a sudden, I saw her energy change. Something just told me to wave to her, so I did. And still, with her eyes closed, Sophia waved back. I motioned for two of my trainers who were at the other end of the room to come over. When they got to me, I pointed directly at Sophia, and she waved back at me again, without ever opening her eyes. "What's going on?" my trainers whispered. "She's seeing without eyes," I told them. As I said, when you focus on the unknown, you get the unknown. After we finished the event in Sydney, we had a more advanced workshop in Melbourne 1 week later, and Sophia came to that workshop as well. "Hey, I saw you, and I saw the trainers," she told me, proceeding to describe everything that had happened in the room during the meditation, when she had her eyes closed. She was extremely accurate. After the workshop, Sophia decided to apply to become one of my corporate trainers, and I selected her because of her ability. So she came to a training just a few months later. At the end of every day of my trainings, I always have the new trainers close their eyes while I run through the entire day's lessons in 30 minutes, just to reactivate the new circuits in their long-term memories. So as I was doing that, Sophia was sitting there with her eyes closed, and all of a sudden, she opened her eyes, shook her head, closed her eyes again, turned around to look behind her, and then turned back around and looked straight at me with an amazed expression on her face. After she repeated this a few times, I motioned for her to just stay with the meditation, and we spoke afterward. Not only could Sophia see in front of her with her eyes closed in meditation, she told me, but now she could see a full 360-degree view. She could see what was in front of her, what was behind her, and what was all around her at the same time. Because Sophia had been in the habit of seeing with her eyes open for her whole life, she kept opening her eyes and closing them again in a reflexive attempt to see what she was already seeing. I happened to have Dr. Fannin at that training, and we were scanning some of the trainers' brains just so we could plan what patterns of brain waves we'd be measuring in our students for our first advanced workshop in Arizona. When it was Sophia's turn, I didn't say anything to Dr. Fannin about her. So he hooked her up to the EEG machine, and then, with her back to us, we sat down about 7 feet away to watch her scan on the monitor. All of a sudden, the back of Sophia's brain, which is the visual cortex, lit up on the computer screen. "Oh, look," Dr. Fannin whispered to me. "She's visualizing." "No," I said softly, shaking my head. "She's not visualizing." "What do you mean?" he mouthed. "She's seeing," I quietly responded. "What do you mean?" he repeated, confused. So I waved at her, and still sitting with her back to me, she reached above her head, turned her hand backward, and waved back. It was amazing. The proof was right on the scan. Sophia was seeing without eyes. Her visual cortex was processing information, just as though she was seeing. But it was her brain that was doing the seeing, not her eyes. As I said, if you focus on the unknown, you get the unknown. Ready to see for yourself? Chapter 12. Changing Beliefs and Perceptions Meditation. In this chapter, I'm going to walk you through a guided meditation designed to help you change some beliefs or perceptions about yourself or your life. I recommend meditating while playing a recording, either of this meditation, which helps you change two beliefs or perceptions and last about an hour, or of a slightly shorter version, which helps you change one belief or perception and lasts 45 minutes. Both meditations are available for purchase on audio CD or MP3 files from my website, www.drjoedispenza.com. The one-hour version is called You Are the Placebo, Book Meditation 1, Changing Two Beliefs and Perceptions. And the 45-minute version is called You Are the Placebo, Book Meditation 2, Changing One Belief and Perception. Or you can make a recording of yourself reading the text of either version of the meditation, both of which you will find in the appendix. Remember that beliefs and perceptions are subconscious states of being. They start with thoughts and feelings that you think and feel over and over until they ultimately become habituated or automatic, at which point they form an attitude. Attitudes strung together become beliefs, and related beliefs strung together become perceptions. Over time, this redundancy creates a view of the world and of yourself that's largely subconscious. It affects your relationships, your behaviors, and really everything in your life. So if you want to change a belief or perception, you have to first change your state of being. And changing your state of being means changing your energy, because in order for you to affect matter, you have to become more energy and less matter, more wave and less particle. That requires you to combine a clear intention and an elevated emotion. Those are the two ingredients. As you've read, this process involves making a decision with a high enough level of energy that your thought about the new belief becomes an experience that carries a strong emotional signature which alters you on some level in that moment. That's how you change your biology. Become your own placebo, and make your mind matter. We all have had experiences that have affected our biology to some degree or another. Remember the Cambodian women from Chapter 7, who developed vision problems because of the horrors they were forced to witness when the Khmer Rouge was in power. That's an extreme example, of course, but you can use the same principle to make a positive change. In order for this to work, the new experience has to be greater than the past experience. In other words, the internal experience you have when you meditate has to have a greater amplitude, greater energy than the external past experience that created the belief and perception that you want to change. The body must respond to a new mind. So you have to put your heart into that elevated emotion. You really have to get goosebumps. You have to feel lifted, inspired, invincible, and empowered. I'll be giving you the opportunity to change two beliefs and perceptions about yourself in this meditation. So before you begin, decide which two you want to change. You can select one of the common limiting beliefs listed in Chapter 7, or you can come up with something else on your own, such as, I'll always have this pain or condition. Life is too hard. People are unfriendly. Success takes a lot of work, or I'll never change. Once you decide, get a piece of paper and draw a vertical line down the middle. On the left side, write down the two beliefs and perceptions you want to change, one on top of the other. Then think for a minute. If you don't want to believe and perceive these things anymore, then what do you want to believe and perceive about yourself and your life? And if you did believe and perceive those new things, how would that make you feel? Write down the new beliefs and perceptions that you want to have on the right side of the paper. As you'll soon see, this meditation is in three parts. The first part is the induction, in which you will use the open focus technique you read about in the last chapter to get you into more coherent alpha or theta brainwave states where you're more suggestible. This is vital because the only way you can truly influence your health and become the placebo is when your own suggestibility is enhanced. In the second part, you'll find the present moment and linger in the quantum void where all possibilities exist. And in the third part, you'll change your beliefs and perceptions. Here, to walk you through what you'll be doing when you actually sit down to meditate, I'll give you some direction at the beginning of each part, and then the text of the meditation will follow in italics. If you're an experienced meditator, feel free to do the entire meditation the whole way through during your first time. If you're new to meditation, you may want to practice the first part every day for a week. Then add the second part the second week and progress to all three parts the third week. Either way, keep doing this same meditation on a daily basis until you see some changes happening in your life. If you are already practicing the meditation that I outlined in Breaking the Habit of Being Yourself, I want to point out that the meditation in this book is entirely different, even though you'll find some similarities in the way in which both meditations begin, the induction phase. If you can only do one meditation per day, I recommend trying this new meditation for a few months so that you can fully reap the benefits. Then you can decide which meditation you want to continue with, or you can switch back and forth between the two as you wish. Induction. Creating brain coherence and slower brain waves with open focus. When you move into the open focus meditation, you'll be going from particle to wave, from the narrow focus you usually have on people, places, and things in the outer world, to a more open focus, where you'll be concentrating not on any physical thing, but on space. After all, if an atom is approximately 99.9% energy, and we're always focusing on the particle, maybe it's time we paid some attention to the wave, because our awareness and our energy are intrinsically combined. Putting attention on our energy is what amplifies our energy. When you use this technique, your brain naturally recalibrates because to do it correctly, you have to let go of your analytical mind, which is very busy thinking in high beta as an identity. That identity, who you know yourself to be, is connected to the external environment, to your emotional addictions and habits, and to time. The moment you get beyond those elements, you're nothing but pure consciousness. And as you read earlier, the different compartments of your brain begin to communicate better, and your brain waves become very orderly. They start sending a coherent signal to the rest of the body, just as you saw in the workshop participants. Stay present during this meditation. Don't try to figure anything out, and don't try to visualize. Just sense and feel. If you can sense where your left ankle is, if you can feel where your nose is, and if you can sense where the space between your sternum and your chest is, then you're resting your awareness, your consciousness, and your attention in those places. You might get a picture or an image in your head, say of your chest or of your heart, but you don't have to strive for that. You just have to become aware of the space within and around your body in space. The first part of the meditation should last for approximately 10 to 15 minutes. Refer figure 12.1 for the verbiage of meditation part 1. Becoming possibility. Finding the present moment and lingering in the void. In this next part of the meditation, you'll find the sweet spot of the present moment, where all things are possible. To do that, you must lay down your identity and disconnect from your body, the environment and time, because the longer you linger in the unknown, the more you draw the unknown to you. And if nerve cells that no longer fire together, no longer wire together, you'll be silencing the circuits in your brain that are connected to the old self. As you've read, those circuits maintain a hardwired program, so if you successfully disconnect from them, you'll also be disconnecting from the program. You'll no longer be emotionally signaling the same genes in the same way. And then as your body moves into a more balanced and harmonious state, you'll find yourself in the sweet spot of the present moment. And that's where all possibility exists. If you find your mind drifting to thoughts about people you know, various problems you have, events that happened in the past or that are coming up in your future, your body, your weight, your pain, your hunger, or even how long this meditation will go on, simply become aware of those thoughts and then bring your consciousness back to the blackness or the quantum void of possibility. And then, once more, surrender into nothing. This second part of the meditation should last for approximately 10 to 15 minutes. Then, allow 10 to 15 minutes after here for you to linger. Refer figure 12.2 for verbiage of meditation part 2. Changing beliefs and perceptions about yourself and your life. In the final section of the meditation, it's time to bring up that first belief or perception about your life that you want to change. I'll ask you if you want to continue believing and perceiving in that way. If your answer is no, then you'll be invited to make a decision with such firm intention that the amplitude of energy related to that decision is greater than the hardwired programs in your brain and the emotional addictions in your body. Your body will then respond to a new mind, to a new consciousness. Next, I'll ask you, what do you want to believe and perceive about yourself and your life, and how would that feel? Then, your task will be to move into a new state of being. You'll have to change your energy by marrying a clear intention with an elevated emotion, and lift matter to a new mind. You should get up feeling different from when you sat down. If so, then you changed biologically. At that point, the past will no longer exist, because that higher amplitude experience will have just overridden the program of the old experience. That's why making that choice becomes an experience that you never forget, because now it's a long-term memory. You'll be making an unknown possibility known, which takes you out of the past now and puts you into the future now, where the event has already happened. Remember, it's not your job to figure out when or where or how it's going to happen. Your job is merely to move into a new state of being and then see the future you're creating. Then you'll be guided to change the second belief or perception. So you'll repeat the same process all over again. This final part of the meditation will last for approximately 20 to 30 minutes. Refer Figure 12.3 for the verbiage of Meditation Part 3. Afterword: Becoming Supernatural. Some critics may categorize this body of work as faith healing. I'm actually fine with that accusation at this point in my life, because what is faith but when we believe in thought more than anything else? Isn't it when we accept a thought, independent of the conditions in our environment, and then surrender to the outcome to such a degree that we live as if our prayers were already answered? Sounds like a formula for the placebo. We've always been the placebo. Maybe it's not so important that we pray rigorously every day to have our prayers answered, but that we instead get up from our meditations as if our prayers have already been answered. If we accomplish this daily, we are at a level of mind where we're truly living in the unknown and expecting the unexpected. And this is when the mysterious knocks on our door. The placebo response is about being healed by thought alone. Thought by itself, however, is unmanifested emotion. Once we embrace that thought emotionally, it begins to become real. That is, it becomes reality. A thought without an emotional signature is void of experience, and thus it is latent, waiting to be made known from the unknown. As we initiate a thought into an experience, and then into wisdom, we are evolving as human beings. When you look into the mirror, you see your reflection, and know that whom you are seeing is the physical you. But how do the true self, the ego, and the soul see themselves? Your life is a mirror image of your mind, your consciousness, and who you really are. There are no schools of ancient spiritual wisdom sitting high on mountaintops in the Himalayas waiting to initiate us into becoming mystics and saints. Our lives are our initiation into greatness. Maybe you and I should see life as an opportunity to reach greater and greater levels of self, so that we can overcome our own limitations with more expanded levels of consciousness. That's how a pragmatist instead of a victim sees it. To abandon the familiar ways in which we've grown accustomed to thinking about life in order to embrace new paradigms will feel unnatural in the beginning. Frankly, it takes effort, and it's uncomfortable. Why? Because when we change, we no longer feel like ourselves. My definition of genius, then, is to become uncomfortable and to be okay with being uncomfortable. How many times in history have admirable individuals who struggled against outdated beliefs, living outside of their comfort zones, been considered heretics and fools, only to later emerge as geniuses, saints or masters? In time, they became supernatural. But how do you and I become supernatural? We have to begin to do what's unnatural. That is to give in the midst of crisis when everyone is feeling lack and poverty. To love when everyone is angry and judging others. To demonstrate courage and peace when everyone else is in fear. To show kindness when others are displaying hostility and aggression. To surrender to possibility when the rest of the world is aggressively pushing to be first, trying to control outcomes and fiercely competing in an endless drive to get to the top. To knowingly smile in the face of adversity, and to cultivate the feeling of wholeness when we're diagnosed as sick. It seems so unnatural to make these types of choices in the midst of such conditions, but if we repeatedly succeed, in time we'll transcend the norm, and we, too, become supernatural. And most important, by your being supernatural, you give others permission to do the same. Mirror neurons fire when we observe someone else performing an action. Our neurons mirror the neurons of that other person, as though we were performing the same action. For example, when you see a professional dancer dancing the salsa, you will dance the salsa better than you did before. If you watch Serena Williams hit a tennis ball, you will hit the ball better than you did before. If you observe someone leading a community with love and compassion, you'll lead in your life in the same way. And if you witness someone self-healing from a disease by changing his or her thought processes, you'll be more prone to do the same. It's my hope that after reading this book, you'll realize that the ultimate belief is the belief in yourself and in the field of infinite possibilities. And when you merge the belief in yourself as a subjective consciousness with your belief in an objective consciousness, then you're balancing intention and surrender. It's tricky, though. If you overintend, that's called trying, you'll get in your own way and always fall short of your vision. If you over-surrender, you'll become too lazy, apathetic, and uninspired. But if you combine a clear intention with an uncompromising trust in possibility, then you'll step into the unknown, and that's when the supernatural starts to unfold. I think that you and I are at our best when we're in this state of being. When these two states merge, I believe that we drink from a deeper well. And when wholeness, self-satisfaction, and self-love truly come from within, because you've ventured beyond what you believed was possible, and you overcame your own self-imposed limitations, that's when the uncommon occurs. To be happy with yourself in the present moment, while maintaining a dream of your future, is a grand recipe for manifestation. When you feel so whole that you no longer care whether it will happen, that's when amazing things materialize before your eyes. I've learned that being whole is the perfect state of creation. I've seen this time and time again in witnessing true healings in people all over the world. They feel so complete that they no longer want, no longer feel lack, and no longer try to do it themselves. They let go, and to their amazement, something greater than they are responds, and they laugh at the simplicity of the process. This book and my research are, hopefully, a beginning and not the end. I'll certainly be the first to raise my hand to confess that I don't know it all. My greatest joy, though, is when I've contributed to someone's personal growth in some way. I've seen transformation on many faces, and I can say that independent of culture, race, or gender, we all look the same when we're freed from the bonds of our own self-limiting beliefs. There's a principle that I adore in biology called emergence. Have you ever seen a school of fish all breaking in the same direction at the same time? Or a flock of hundreds of birds in flight all moving together as one consciousness, as one mind? When you look at this phenomenon, you might think that all of the individuals in the group are following one leader who's showing the way. It appears that the synchronistic movements of hundreds or even thousands of individual organisms all doing the same thing at the same time is a top-down phenomenon. But that's not what's really happening. It turns out that this level of unity takes place as a bottom-up phenomenon. The group actually has no leader. Everyone is leading. They're all part of the same collective consciousness, doing the same thing at the same time. It's as if the whole is connected in a field of information beyond space and time. One community is presenting as one mind. One organism is created from each individual becoming one. There's power in numbers. We've been programmed and conditioned into a subconscious belief that if we lead with too much passion and change the world, we'll surely be assassinated. Most great leaders who've altered the course of history with a profound message get it in the end. Whether we're talking about Martin Luther King Jr., Mahatma Gandhi, John Lennon, Joan of Arc, William Wallace, Jesus of Nazareth, or Abraham Lincoln, an unconscious stigma exists that suggests that all visionary leaders must give their lives for the truth. But maybe we've finally arrived at a time in history when it's more important to live for the truth than to die for it. If hundreds, thousands, or even millions of human beings embrace a new consciousness based on possibility, align their actions with their intentions, and live by greater universal laws of love, kindness, and compassion, a new consciousness will emerge, and we'll experience true oneness. Then we might just have too many leaders to remove. So if, on a daily basis, you're committed to demonstrating your personal best and you're overcoming selfish states of mind driven by stress hormones, and I'm doing the same, then together we're changing the world by changing ourselves. And if enough of us are tempering ourselves into more whole human beings, then as the individual communities we live in emerge around the world, they'll eventually consume the present mindset of reality based on fear, competition, lack, hostility, greed, and deception. In time, the old will be completely consumed by the new. A particular concern of mine is that we now live in a world where scientific research is commingled with self-interest and often influenced by profits. So I question whether we're being told the truth about the way things really are. It's up to us, then, to discover the truth for ourselves. Imagine a world inhabited by billions of people, just like a school of fish, living as one, where everyone is embracing similar uplifting thoughts, connected to unlimited possibility, and these thoughts allow people to make more inspired choices, demonstrate more altruistic behaviors, and create more enlightening experiences. People would then no longer be living by the survival-based emotions we're so familiar with now, feeling more like matter than energy, separate from possibility. Instead, they'd be living by more expanded, selfless, heartfelt emotions, feeling more like energy than matter, connected to something greater. If we could do this, then an entirely different world would emerge, and we would be living by a new credo based on the open heart. That's what I see when I close my eyes to meditate. Dr. Joe Dispenza. Appendix. Script of the Changing Beliefs and Perceptions Meditation. If you want to make your own guided meditation recording, instead of purchasing one of the pre-recorded audio CDs or MP3 versions from my website, feel free to record yourself reading one of the following two scripts. The first script is for the hour-long meditation, which involves changing two beliefs or perceptions, And the second is a 45-minute meditation that involves changing just one belief or perception. If you are recording your own meditation, pause for a second or two at each set of ellipses, and pause for at least 5 full seconds between sentences. As you'll see, I've added a note after the second part of each meditation, reminding you to include a period of silence on your recording, so that you can linger in the unknown before you begin the last part of the meditation, where you'll change either one or two beliefs or perceptions. Hour-long version of meditation. Refer figure A-1 for the script of You Are the Placebo, Meditation 1, Changing Two Beliefs and Perceptions. 45-minute version of meditation. Refer figure A-2 for the script of You Are the Placebo, Meditation 2, Changing One Belief and Perception.
For more information on CDs, plus DVDs, books, and workshops that Dr. Joe Dispenza now offers in the U.S. and around the world, please visit his website at www.drjoedispenza.com. You can also stay up to date with Dr. Joe Dispenza via Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. We hope you have enjoyed this recording.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.